So wondering if any of you have any favorites along the way. Any favorite biblical heroes? Noah, an environmentalist, wasn't he? Esther, any others? Daniel, you know my favorite? Elijah, at least especially as a kid, I still like Elijah. And, you know, how could you not? Because I would think about, now Elijah was one of the early prophets, before what we would call in the Bible the writing prophets. The writing prophets start with the, probably about Amos's time and onward, that's about 750 BC. Elijah is about 100 years at least before that. But I think of Elijah, he was like Robin Hood living under evil King John, right? Standing up, and it's just a time of great darkness and difficulty. Or Zorro, like Zorro defending the people against evil villains and tyrants. So, and the kind of miracles that did with Elijah, you know, were amazing. But, you know, sometimes in Bible reading, we come across stories that we don't know quite what to do with. You ever have that experience? You know, oh, that's a person of God, but I'm not really sure if that's right or not. Or this story in particular is one that I've scratched my head about, which is why I chose it. You know, what are you supposed to do with this story where Elijah seems to be playing with fire? Especially as a kid, right? Don't play with fire, you'll get burnt, you know? And yet, he seems to be, and so what are we supposed to learn, you know, from this prophet who calls down fire from heaven and just burns up 50 people, 51, I guess, right? The captain and his 50 people at a time. You know, is the message is, if you're a prophet, it's okay to play with fire? Strike some fear of God in people? It's interesting, just for a moment, Luke chapter 9, there is a reference to this story in Luke chapter 9. We know what the disciples, a couple of the disciples at least, knew this story and what lesson they got from it. Okay, Luke chapter 9, beginning at verse 51. Now, if you have a Bible with headings, it will say Samaritan opposition to it. In verse 51, it says, as the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, that is Jesus, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. That is, he is beginning the march towards his death, where he will be crucified, have great opposition. But he sent messengers on ahead, it says, who went into a Samaritan village to get things ready for him, you know, to stay for the night, hotel accommodations, if you will. But the people there said, no room at the inn. They said, we are not welcome, because he was heading for Jerusalem. Now, when the disciples, James and John, saw this, you know, they were outraged. And they asked, Lord, do you want us to call fire down from heaven to destroy them? And the implication would be, like Elijah did. You know, there's a story, here's a time to apply it, just say it, and we'll flick the bick, right? And Jesus turned and, what does it say? He rebuked them. No, that's not the lesson of the story. And then he and his disciples went to another village. So at least what the disciples, James and John, and they're called the sons of thunder, so could very well be because they liked thunder and lightning and they wished that they knew how to use it like Elijah. So, but it seems to be saying with Jesus is saying, no, I think you've missed the point. That's not what it's about. So what is it teaching us? Well, in the Bible reading program, it says when you read the stories, you're supposed to do a couple of things. It says, try to answer these questions while you read. Who are the people in the story? What happens in the story? What does the story teach us about God and about following God? Okay, so we're going to work through those questions this morning. You with me? So you need to have your Bibles open to 2 Kings chapter 1. Who are the characters in the story? At least let's start with the main characters. Who are the main characters in the story? The unfaithful king. Okay, King Ahaziah. He's the king of the northern. Israel has been divided into two. So the great king Solomon, it said, had a divided heart, and that divided heart, he liked to follow God and he liked to do his own thing. And that ended up splitting up into two kingdoms, okay, north and south. So we have this king, he's the king of the north. Another main character, Elijah. Yes, thank you. I know it's obvious, but we're doing the basics here. Okay, and the angel. Yes, the angel of the Lord. Okay, that's three. You saw it acted out, so it should be easy up here. Who else is there? Captain and his men. Okay, actually three captains, right? And who else? Yes, the servant of the king. So there's a messenger, okay, of the king as well who plays in there. Now, what do we know about these characters? King Ahaziah, what do we know about him? Well, first, we know he's a king, right? And he's the king of the northern kingdom. He's king in Samaria. Now, what it is helpful to know the book of Kings. I know it seems like, oh, history and dates and some people just like, oh, that really tunes them out. But what it is important to know is that there is that kind of a rating scale that goes on within the book of Kings. And it will have this when it introduces a new king, and it will basically give you what they put on his tombstone. And the tombstone was either he did good in the eyes of the Lord as David had done. And David is the good example, the good standard, King David. Or he did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And King Jeroboam, he's like the evil Darth Vader, maybe, if you will, of the kingdom. Okay? So you've got choose your heroes, good and bad, going on here. It's interesting, on the northern kingdom, there was never one king that did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Bad track record all the way along. Now, if you want to, it's interesting as well, a king, anybody know who King Ahaziah's father was? Ahab. Now, it's interesting thing about King Ahab. We had the two standards. David, he was like the best. This is the good example to follow. Follow God wholeheartedly. And then you had King Jeroboam. And then King Jeroboam got replaced as the ultimate villain. Okay? There was somebody worse than King Jeroboam. And who? Guess who it was? King Ahab. Yeah. So he was even worse. Who's worse than Darth Vader? The Sith or something? Okay, whatever. You get the idea here happening. And then he grew up. That's his dad. Good possibilities for him, right? Now, we also know that there's some, what does it say at the beginning? It says, after Ahab's death, so that's his father, the king, evil, more evil than anybody else before him, Moab rebelled against Israel. Moab was paying tribute, like lots and lots. Some put it at, they were paying about 100,000 lamb fleeces a year. So they had huge profits that were coming in. So basically what's happening is there's now a political and economic crisis taking place in Ahab's time. And then what happens? There's a personal health crisis that hits, right? What happens? Yeah, he falls out the lattice work, it says, which is usually what they protected the windows with. So it's probably what he's doing. He's fallen out a window. And you might ask, like, how did you fall out a window? Wonder that in the story? Probably, I think it's a good conjecture. Yeah, I think he was imbibing a little bit too much. I think he was dealing with the crisis that was happening in his life with the bottle, okay, and drinking. And so he's probably drunk, and that's why he's just staggering around and falls out the window and almost kills himself, okay? And then what does he do here? Well, we'll get to that, what happens in the story. Another character, Elijah. What do you know about Elijah? Good, bad, good. 1 star, 2 star, 3 star, 5 star. 5 star, okay? He's a 5-star follower of God. He's the main guy on the block in terms of the messenger of the Lord. He's been having to deal with King Ahab all his life, and it's been a time of great darkness, and he's been like one of those candles for God blowing in the wind there. Okay? Angel of the Lord represents God, okay? God in working clothes, if you will, in flesh and blood there. And then the messengers, there's messengers on each way. And they have to travel, it says, down to Ekron. Ekron, do you know what country the Ekron is in? Do you think that's in Israel somewhere or not? Who thinks it's in Israel somewhere? Who thinks it's not in Israel somewhere? Okay, so it's outside of Israel. Anybody remember where Goliath, the story of David and Goliath, where Goliath came from? What nationality was he? He was a Philistine. Anybody know where his hometown? Gath, yes, Gath. Ekron is like as close as you can get to Gath, okay? So he's consulting, this isn't, 100 years later, who's he consulting? He's sending his messengers to consult the God of the Philistines, the guys that were the enemies. Now, this is kind of like, if you think about, he's kind of sending them to consult a witch doctor, okay, when he's got the world-renowned healthcare specialist in his own country, in his own backyard. And he like totally ignores him, doesn't even call on him through Elijah. And he sends them what would be a journey probably about as far as Abbotsford, but you couldn't hop in a car, right? You had to travel by foot or donkey. So it's a couple days probably. So that's why the king is like, how come you're back so quickly? If you were those guys that were sent on this mission to go consult the witch doctor, what would you think of that job assignment? Do you ever have anything kind of a little, you're asked to do at workplace? How do you think you might be feeling? Sorry? Phone in sick, yeah, that's a good idea. How else might you be feeling? Conflicted, yeah, I need the money. Oh, it's just a job, it's his, I'm going to do it, whatever. Or you might feel conflicted, you might feel like, this doesn't feel very ethical, but the king has told me to do it, what do I do? Phone in sick? You think about it there. And then the captain, those captains, how do you think that first captain was feeling? Yeah, I think he's feeling powerful. I mean, part of his language is he's just like going up there and he's barking out orders. And you think he's a captain of at least 50 men, right? He's used to saying, jump, and everybody says, how high? Right? And they're sent out to one guy. No big deal. How about the second captain? What are you thinking? But you know the saying, lightning never strikes twice. Which means it never strikes the same place twice, right? So, like, what are the odds of that happening again? My son Nathan is doing statistics this summer at SFU. So anything with a statistical analysis these days, he's wanting to be on it. And he's given me, well, the statistical possibilities of lightning striking exactly the same place twice. And there's lots of other things he says in between. But that would be impossible. So I said, but you see, in this story, it actually took place. I would be thinking there's something else going on here. Because statistically speaking, that's not supposed to happen. So if you're the third captain, you don't need a degree in statistics to know this isn't a very good idea, right? Okay, so it's kind of interesting. So what happens in the story? So we know in the story that King Ahaziah sends out some messengers to get him to the pagan god, okay, Baal, and he wants an answer about whether he's going to get better. And obviously he's hoping that he can get a miracle cure here. And it gets interrupted, and God has a message for him about what's going to happen. So I wonder in verses 9 and following, when he sends these captains, what do you think he's trying to do? What is King Ahaziah trying to do in sending his henchmen, to Elijah? Intimidate? Yeah. He's trying to do him in. Silence the messenger, right? Then I don't have to listen to it. This guy's like a flashing red light, and if I just smash the light out, then there's no danger happening anymore. He's trying definitely to intimidate him and probably trying to kill him, because the angel will say after the third one, okay, now it's safe. You can go. There's some fear of God in that place among the people who are his henchmen doing his bidding. And they're coming to you now begging on their knees, seeing what's up. See, Ahaziah is desperate to get a reversal of the prophecy against him, and he will use massive force if needed to intimidate God or God's messengers. And we actually know that that's what his father did. If we were to look back in 1 Kings 22, his father Ahab is going to go into battle. And he asks for the king of the south, Jehoshaphat, who's a godly person, to come and help him. And Jehoshaphat is a really wise guy. And he says, man, you're bent on evil. I'm not having anything to do with you. Actually, he doesn't say that. He says, let's go into partnership. All of my troops are your troops. And it's almost going to cost him his life. And God's going to send an angel later and like, duh. What are you associating? Why are you going into alliance with evil? But either case, Jehoshaphat says, well, before we go into battle, shouldn't we inquire of the Lord? When we do something significant is happening, shouldn't we inquire of the Lord? And King Ahab, his father, said, oh yeah, and he consults all these prophets, but they're all his paid prophets to give him exactly the message that he wants. And Jehoshaphat looks at this and he says, like, isn't there a prophet of the Lord? And King Ahab says, well, yeah, there's one, but I hate him. Why? Because he's no good? Because he never tells me anything good. Oh, Jehoshaphat says, I want to hear that guy. So Micaiah is the name of that prophet. He comes in. And the head of the prophets gives Micaiah some advice before he goes into the king. And he says, this is what everybody else is saying and what they're all doing. They're saying he's going to be victorious. Go for it. And Micaiah, the prophet, says, but I can only say what God tells me to say. Not going to be a good thing if you don't go along with everybody else, what everybody else is doing. So he goes in, and the first thing he says, oh yeah, okay, it's a good one. And they say, you got to tell me the truth. Oh, the truth. You sure you want the truth? Well, the truth is you're going to lose horribly and you're going to die in battle. And then King Ahab, Ahaziah's father, leans over to Jehoshaphat and he said, see, didn't I tell you this guy was bad? He never tells me anything good. And then Jehoshaphat is stupid because he goes into battle too with them and he almost dies. But you get the idea. And what happened in that episode is that King Ahab, Ahaziah's father, first he has his henchmen, his chief prophet, go up and he smacks the prophet Micaiah across the face. So Elijah's going to probably get similar treatment. And then he says, and throw that guy in the clink till I come back safely. And if I don't come back safely, he ain't going to be alive either. So there's probably pretty good evidence that like father, like son, that that's what he's trying to do to Elijah. And that if he doesn't get the message that he wants, that Elijah's head is going to be delivered on a platter. Well, is Elijah playing with fire? You see, King Ahaziah sends his henchmen. Does he really think that Elijah is a prophet of God? Yes? No? Yes? No. No. He doesn't think that, right? If he was a really prophet of God, like the God who made the world and who has control of kingdoms, he thinks he can be intimidated. And the captain who goes believes it as well, because he's going to bring him in. Does Elijah send down the fire? Who sends the fire down from heaven on these guys? God. Doesn't it say the fire of Elijah? No, it says the fire of God. And Elijah says, well, if you're using the language of man of God, come down. If I am a man of God, then may fire come down from heaven. The story of Elijah, if you know anything about the story of Elijah, ever any stories with fire coming down from heaven? Yes? What story do we know about Elijah with fire coming down from heaven? On the mountain. Back in 1 Kings 18, there's this big confrontation with Ahaziah's father, King Ahab. And all the prophets of Baal, everybody is on the Baal side except Elijah. And there's this confrontation. He rebuilds an ancient altar. And he says, well, what's the contest going to be over? Baal, the god, the King Ahab and King Ahaziah's following. In excavations that archaeologists have done, they find figurine statues of Baal. You know what Baal has in his right hand? A thunderbolt, okay? And sometimes he has a club in his left. So he's the god of thunder and lightning. So that contest was choose the best, what are you best at? You know when they do, if somebody's insulted and then choose your weapon, you know, and then they would have the battle taking place. So basically it's like you get to choose what you are the specialist at. Well, they choose Baal's specialty, thunder and lightning. You remember that story? Who gets the lightning coming? They can't do it at all. And God, so he sends down fire. So the first time you see fire come down from heaven, what do you think should be going on in Ahaziah's mind when they tell him? It's just random chance, you know, dumb luck, bad luck, do it again. God is trying to spark his memory here. The contest that was taking place under your father is still going on here. God, what is this story teaching us about God and following God? It tells us God knows and God speaks. So listen up. You know, the king ignored the clear commands of God. You shouldn't have any other gods. Consult God, seek God. He ignored godly messengers and actively tried to silence God's messenger. He had a godly neighbor and business partner in King Jehoshaphat. He had a godly business partner who he went into arrangements with. They did some shipbuilding together. That went bad. Some other stuff. Who did exactly the things that he ought to. When he had a personal crisis, political and economic crisis, we read that he consulted God in 2 Chronicles. And what about he learns nothing from that? And God speaks not only through his word and through the people, godly people that he brings around us. God speaks through life, through political and economic crisis. You remember 9/11? How many of you remember where they were on 9/11? You remember how many people were praying to God and wanting to go to services and things? And then where did that all go? Went away really quickly, right? What a short-lived spiritual revival. And Ahaziah ignores all the warning signs, including his near-death experience. You know, that fall could have been immediately fatal, and it wasn't. Why? Because God was gracious, giving him yet another chance to change ways. You know, I worked on construction years ago, quite a few years ago when I was actually in shape and could do that kind of thing without feeling like I was totally dead at the end of a day. We worked in building schools, and so there's different trades that would come in sometimes for weeks at a time, and there was one guy, I'll call him Mike, who came in with the drywallers. And during this time, God was kind of challenging me, what kind of witness are you being in your workplace at all? And I thought, I don't know, God, can you bring somebody across my path? And one day we're working in the same room, he's doing some drywalling, and I was doing some woodworking in there. And he said, hey, Dave, are you religious? I thought, oh, that's an interesting question. I said, yeah, I guess so. Why do you ask? Well, I said, I notice you never swear. Hey, okay, that's pretty good. That's as far. But I asked, you know, why do you ask? Well, he said, I was wondering if I'd be able to get a Bible. A Bible? I was like, you know, of the crowd of drywallers that came in, this is the guy that I thought would not be asking for a Bible. And so I was like, sure, yeah, I think I can find a Bible for you. You know, why would that be? Well, and basically, one of the lines that has always stuck with me, he said, you know, I know God must be real because he saved my butt so many times. And it was things like stupid things that he would do when he was drunk and getting into vehicles with people that were drunk that he shouldn't have and near misses. And they were like wake-up calls, and he was finally saying, you know what? I can connect the dots. God is wanting me to know more about him. And I figured the Bible must be the place to do it. Yeah, he was getting the idea that God speaks in life experiences, if we just listen up and God speaks in His Word, even if He didn't know exactly what it said, He knew the Ten Commandments. He'd seen Charlton Heston. So he talked about that too. But King Ahaziah, you know, he failed to learn from history. Even when history was repeating itself again and again and again, didn't you get that feeling by the time the second captain and by the time the third captain, don't you think this guy is insane? Aren't you feeling like that? You're thinking like, I know, three strikes, you're out. You're an idiot. Like the fire from memory should have jogged his witness. And he too must have heard about this. And he was probably a boy or even an adult when Mount Carmel took place. And he would have heard his father come in breathless after this huge thing and telling his mother all about what happened. Of course he would have. And everybody in Israel knew about it. You know, but then again, that fire from heaven incident, what did that do in his father and his mother's life? Did it change them? No, nothing. You know, the ancient stories in the scriptures and even more recent one within Ahaz's life went in one ear and out the other without pausing for a moment in between. As commentator Walter Kaiser notes, what Ahaziah learned from history was that nothing at all was to be learned from it. But the story is clear, isn't it, that God does hold people responsible for lessons of the past? History is more than a dull repetition of facts and figures and history repeating itself. God is interested in history because history is the stage on which God is acting out His story and on which He holds individuals accountable. Ignore the lessons of the past and you are bound to repeat them. You know the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I think of what, you heard the tragedy, of course we know, that took place in Quebec last month in July, right? These rail cars. And how many people got killed there? You know, almost the same amount as that captain and his 50 men, right? In a ball of fire. And the investigators sifting through the rubble of that. And God brings these things into our lives at times, like just barely escaped your life, Mike. Listen up. Maybe it's, what is it that we are wanting to, are we playing with fire? It's interesting, the story, I thought Elijah was playing with fire. And as you get into the story, you realize, no, who's playing with fire? King Ahaziah is playing with fire. The captains are playing with fire. Others are playing with fire by not following God's ways. And God says, listen up. In Deuteronomy, He says, I have set before you life and death. And they saw death. They saw the fireball. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to His voice and hold fast to Him. Life, death, choose. Let's pray. Lord, I thank You that You are the God of history, that You are the God who isn't wishing to call down fire from heaven to destroy people. But Lord, when people continually ignore Your ways and do everything that they can to tune You out and are hell-bent, destruction is just waiting, is the natural result. Lord, we thank You that You have, through this story and through history and through Your Spirit, You have given us the opportunity to choose life this day and to not play with fire in our lives, whether it be making unholy alliances in business or in choice of marriage partner or in the company that we keep. And Lord, that we would give You everything. We sang, Lord, this morning, Jesus, everything, not Jesus a little bit. Lord, may we remember as we come to celebrate communion this day that You are everything. You have given everything that we might have life. Amen.